Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jeff Singletary. I'm with the law firm of Snell and Wilmer, and I represent petitioner Alamani Tall. If I may at this time reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Sure, would you keep track of your time, though?
Yes, thank you. As the court has already indicated, the principal issue raised in our petition is whether or not the crime of manufacture or sale of a counterfeit good, namely California Penal Code Section 350, is a crime involving moral turpitude. There is also a second independent claim warranting, or at least presented in our petition, warranting reversal, and that is the due process claim. As the Attorney General has noted in his brief, there is a serious exhaustion of administrative remedies problem in that claim.
Isn't counterfeiting a trademark really just a species of theft? You're either ripping off somebody who thinks they're buying a real Gucci bag when it's not, or you're defrauding the person who owns the mark.
I don't believe so. And I don't believe so under how 350A2 or A1 and A2 is drafted, in that it requires either the willful manufacturer, and the willful meaning just the manufacturer knows that he's creating a spurious mark, an inauthentic mark. With just the willful manufacturer of a mark, there is no intent, there does not necessarily have to be an intent to defraud the end user of that product. In fact, without the guidance of any supporting case authority, that very well might be the case, where the manufacturer of a counterfeit good may have an intent that the end user of that product knows that the mark is counterfeit. You also address the fact that maybe the owner of this trademark may be defrauded. I don't think that's fraud. I mean, the owner of the trademark might be subject to unfair competition, dilution in the value of his mark.
It's not stealing the mark from the owner?
I don't believe so. It's not stealing the mark so much as, in that case, that would be, I mean, stealing is burglary, which is theft, which is different than
ahead,
fraud.
If I go ahead and make a knockoff of a Rolex watch, aren't I ripping off Rolex?
I believe you're engaged in unfair competition with Rolex, absolutely. Whether that's
fraud. But if you're passing
fraud,
it as a Rolex, it is by definition a counterfeit, is it not?
No, that is a definition of a counterfeit. A counterfeit is an inauthentic mark that's used in, or that's confusingly similar to the...
Which is represented essentially in the mind of the consumer to be the same.
Well, that's where I think the statute isn't explicit. The statute here doesn't require, as the federal criminal statute, trafficking in counterfeit goods requires the mark to be used in a confusing, misleading, or deceitful manner, whereas the California statute doesn't say anything on that point. There's no cases in California that have addressed whether or not the intent to defraud the consumer, as opposed to just engaging in unfair competition, diluting the value of the mark, is an essential element of that crime.
Well, the statute does define counterfeit mark to mean a spurious mark that is identical with or confusingly similar to a registered mark. Somebody has to be confused, and wouldn't we infer that it must be in the mind of the purchaser or the consumer of the good?
That's one inference to make. It may also just be a definition of what a counterfeit is. A counterfeit is a spurious mark, which is, it's something that looks like the original, or is very close to what the original is. But again, that, unlike the federal crime, doesn't have to be used in a manner that is likely to confuse, likely to mislead, or likely to cause deceit.
But we didn't, in our Navarro case, we say that fraudulent, when we're looking at these various categorical methods, fraudulent means knowing false representations made in order to gain something of value.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that basically what you do when you sell a counterfeit good? Is that you pass it off as something else, and you do so you can get some money out of it.
At base, yes, it is.
So
where you're passing off something as the question is how much value you're receiving for that. If you're receiving value equivalent to a knockoff, if you're selling your counterfeit good to somebody who knows it's a counterfeit good, who's buying a Louis Vuitton purse knowing that it's $2,000 on the market, but I'm getting it for $800, they know it's not an authentic mark. Yes, you're receiving value. I don't know if it goes to that Navarro
store. You haven't.
Right, Navarro doesn't. We're not on a sliding scale of value. You know, Navarro Lopez basically says that is a fraudulent crime, and it seems to me that this crime falls right in that definition.
And the pecuniary gain is the gain to the maker or the passer off. It's not the gain to the purchaser.
Right.
In that sense, I agree that there is value being transmitted from one to the other, and I mean, you have on the one hand the manufacturer of the mark that looks confusingly similar.
So to get back to Judge Silverman's original question, isn't this just another species of theft?
When you say theft, and the problem why I'm having a problem with theft is theft isn't fraud.
Theft is
deceiving somebody, but I mean. Any crime is essentially deceitful. I mean, you're violating the obligation imposed on you by law, and if it's a specific intent crime, which I admit this is a specific intent crime, then, I mean, in a sense, that is deceitful. But that would mean that crimes involving moral turpitude,
well,
that essentially means any crime.
An assault is not deceitful, is it?
What's that?
An assault. That's about as direct and undeceitful a crime as I can think of.
You're correct, but I don't know if deceit has yet been is the equivalent of fraud for determining whether a crime is a crime involving moral turpitude.
You mentioned you wanted to save 4 minutes for rebuttal, I believe you said at the beginning.
Oh, thank you very much.
Good morning.
Morning. May it please the court, Chris Fuller again for the Attorney General. It seems as though counsel has butted up against the concession that this is another species of theft, and it seems to me that with that concession, we fall within this court's precedent that indeed petty theft is a crime involving moral turpitude, which is Morash versus INS 363 F 2nd 30 in 1966. Esperanza Ponce, Esperza Ponce, Ponce, 193 F3rd 1133 in 1999, petty theft is a CIMT, that is a crime involving moral turpitude. So it's pretty clear from this court's precedent. Now, the question may be, there has been raised the question of whether or not these pre-Taylor cases would in fact apply because they did not necessarily involve a categorical or modified categorical approach. But following the example that Judge Reinhart gave us in case that Judge McKeown just cited, that's
Navarro.
Thank you, Navarro Lopez. That is that when he clarified, correcting Judge Pragerson, that indeed fraud cases involving fraud or even implicit fraud. We look back to a pre-Taylor Supreme Court decision, Jordan, to understand that indeed those types of cases fall within a crime involving moral turpitude. So this court's precedent, even though pre-Taylor, is clear that theft, petit larceny, are in fact crimes involving moral turpitude. Although this is a modern crime, it is in fact no different than larceny. It's the common law larceny in a unique modern arena. Now, using the categorical approach, there's one thing that, if I can, before I get to that, though, I'd like to raise, and we mentioned it briefly in our brief at page 20, and it hasn't been addressed, and I want to make sure the court understands that it's something quite serious, and that is that this alien, representing himself, and repeatedly so, in four separate hearings in which the IJ warned him to get counsel if he needed it. He decided to go alone. He had a history of representing himself. He did so on his application for adjustment and his appeal, and he almost won that appeal, by the way. A three-page report in the record suggests that it was a really close call. So he was fairly astute at representing himself, spoke English very well. He decided to represent himself, and he conceded the charge that his conviction was for a crime involving moral turpitude. He denied the second charge with regard to him being here without proper documents, and in fact, he provided evidence such that the DHS attorney withdrew that charge and then added another one, and he denied that one as well. So he was quite astute in his...
argument is that he's now judicially estopped from the argument because he previously took a position in litigation before the board that was contradictory to the position he now takes.
Yes, and I don't think this court should slightly skip over that fact, and because he filed the brief to the board, and although then raised the crime involving moral turpitude issue, never explained away his concession that it was in fact a crime involving moral turpitude, and his now learned counsel appointed from the court has never asserted the reasons other than to say he was without legal counsel. But this is an alien who just previously had spent 2 years in prison for standing in front of a court and conceding a charge in a criminal case. He understood that there are consequences for conceding. All of the circumstances suggest that he was a pretty astute fellow and made a knowing concession. That has not been withdrawn.
This is the concession before the immigration
yes.
judge.
Yes, in which he conceded.
That it was, in fact, a crime involving moral
turpitude. That's exactly right. And that's one of the reasons why the judge then ultimately did not address that issue in great detail, because ultimately the alien conceded that. So although that's not the issue, one of the questions before the court, it is a question before the court because we raised it briefly in our brief, I'm just concerned that we're sliding over that too much. Granted, crime involving moral turpitude, as Judge Barzon said in a previous opinion, you know, the dissent in Jordan goes on, you know, from Judge Jackson to say that crimes involving moral turpitude are kind of nebulous. It's difficult. And what I want to make sure is that if in fact we skip over the fact that an alien conceded that charge was a CIMT, but nonetheless he gets an avenue to the Court of Appeals, does that mean that any time there's a charge of a CIMT, because it's a nebulous charge, we automatically pave the path up to the Court of Appeals? Well, that certainly can't be. There are concessions, there are reasons to block that in terms of failure to exhaust, and all sorts of reasons why it can't come up to the court. In this case, I think that's an important matter that the court should consider. As to the categorical review, I do believe the court is absolutely right. If you look at this statute, it is categorically a crime involving fraud. Again, following an example from Navarro-Lopez.
Let me ask you about that. I can see fraud if you sell a counterfeit good, I can see fraud if you possess it with intent to sell. But you could get convicted under this statute for manufacturing and then sitting on them in your warehouse.
Yes.
So how is that a crime of fraud?
Because using the example of Judge Pregerson from Navarro-Lopez, in which he went to common, what he called generic definitions from dictionaries to help explain what a crime involving moral turpitude is, right in the statute the word counterfeit is included. That word is loaded with meaning, and it's common law meaning. And I've gone to my trusty little Webster's New World Dictionary, common definition adjective, made in imitation of something genuine so as to defraud. Noun, an imitation made to deceive. Verb, to make an imitation of something in order to defraud. The common meaning of counterfeit is loaded with fraud. And then you look at the charge as well. Indeed, 350A2.
But fraud supposes a more than one person, correct?
Indeed.
Yell and nobody hears you. I mean, that's the question, is whether the first part of this crime is broader than the fraud.
But there doesn't have to be a second person to be defrauded, only if there's an intent to defraud, right? And ultimately, here, the manufacturer, look at 350A2. If, in fact, I were going to manufacture one of these marks, and there are 10 of them listed, of course, when we get to the modified category, we can talk about Louis Vuitton and Coach and Christian Dior, etc. If I were to manufacture one and hang it on my wall for artistic reasons, that might be something. But the crime itself says more than 1,000 of these. He's manufacturing more than 1,000 of these counterfeit, that is, making an imitation with the purpose, with the intent to defraud.
Slip into the modified categorical.
I know. I just said. I mentioned the 10 the things just for the purpose of saying to let you know that's the type of label that he was doing. I don't want to go to modified. No, I think this is categorical on its face.
We have to decide this on a modified categorical approach. We've got some problems with the proof, do we not, on this record?
Well, I can get to that if you'd like me to address that now, but I do think under modified category we get there as well, but I think categorically, because this is intrinsically involving fraud because of that word counterfeit and the nature of the crime, more than 1,000, we can't ignore the terms of the statute. On the face, more than, what are you going to do with more than 1,000 counterfeit marks but manufacture them to provide somebody for gain?
You have an art exhibit.
Yeah, but then you have to buy it from the artist.
Yeah, and then we get to the problem we had with the Navarro case. Can you come up with some creative thing, or does it have to in fact be some reasonable?
A drug crime where you have that kind of quantity.
That's right. That's right. And with the definition, the common law definition, common definition, the categorical approach says this is indeed, I mean, your instincts, the common instincts are this is a modern day version of old common law larceny. It rips off both the holder of the registered mark as well as the potential buyer. And it's done for one purpose and one purpose only, and that's to defraud for the purpose of getting gain. It falls directly under Navarro-Lopez, under the majority's opinion, and ultimately using what the majority said in Navarro, both with dictionary definitions to show us the common generic meaning, as well as Judge Reinhardt's example of following the pre-Taylor precedent from the Supreme Court, where they look to fraud as a crime involving moral turpitude to slide into the categorical approach. This court should follow that same example, use the common meanings of these terms, look at its precedent that petty theft, petty larceny are indeed crimes involving moral turpitude, and this categorically falls in that category. I have 23 seconds left. Even under the modified categorical approach, we have here 10 separate counts, 9 of which, each under 350A2, 9 separate marks, counterfeit marks, more than 1,000 each, based on the information in the case. And, interestingly enough, the word or from the statute is changed in the information to and. He willfully manufactured, he intentionally sold, and he purposely possessed for sale more than 1,000 each of these documents. That and is a critical there in the modified approach. It indeed tells you that he did all of them. So the example Judge McEwen used, that I'm manufacturing for a thing, ultimately in a modified categorical approach, false. Because indeed all of them he did, according to that, and he pled guilty to each.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller.
Thank you.
Secretary.
In terms of him conceding that he was
clearly did.
He said the immigration judge asked him, have you been convicted of crime involving moral turpitude? And he said yes. He admitted that charge. My question, and one, I don't know if the record supports Mr. Tall as such a sophisticated litigator. I read the record as, were you convicted of this crime of a Penal Code Section 350A violation? Yes. Were you convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude? Yes. I don't read the record to see that he had a real understanding of what an amorphous standard like a crime involving moral turpitude was. And let's say that we are dealing with a different crime here, a crime that the court has said is not categorically
a crime. If he's representing himself pro se, why should we cut him any slack? And that's no different than if the immigration judge had asked you, if you've been representing him, you know, what's your answer to the charge? And the charge is, I admit that this is a crime involving moral turpitude. No question under those circumstances, your client would be bound by that admission.
My question is, if one admits in an immigration hearing that they committed a crime involving moral turpitude when the crime that they committed wasn't a crime involving moral turpitude, are they removable because of that concession? I don't think so.
In other words, if he's just mistaken and it's some other petty crime that's not moral turpitude, then it would be somewhat unconscionable to deport him on the basis of a misunderstanding.
Yes, and it's been our position that 350A isn't a crime involving moral turpitude. So even if he did, which he did, admit or concede the charge, I think it's difficult to stick him with that if, as a matter of law, this is not a crime involving moral turpitude. Another issue I'd like to quickly address is the common meaning of counterfeit. I don't know if we can look to the dictionary meaning of counterfeit to determine what the statute says counterfeit is. Counterfeit is defined in the statute, and under the categorical approach, the idea is to compare the language of the statute with the generic definition of the federal crime, that being the crime involving moral turpitude. The crime involving moral turpitude is the definition that isn't defined, and therefore I think we got it backwards on that. On the last issue, in terms of, I'd like to quickly actually address the modified categorical approach. All that the government has asserted is they changed ors to ands. I don't know if that's enough to show that he, in this case, has been convicted of a crime that inherently involves fraud, that there's an element of fraud in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Fuller. The case just argued is submitted.